Here comes Luca.
It's a play by man that time, hanging in the air.
Oh, he's one-legged three-pointer! That's spectacular!
What's up? Welcome to 77 Minutes, the only Dallas Mavericks podcast that would take a one-footed three-pointer with 30 seconds left in the third quarter.
What and the hit hell it. Was that? What still was that?
Still absurd. Just
art,
just still,
David, art.
That actually might be the most ambitious shot that I've ever seen Luka take, which is saying something. But in that context, that specific shot, oh man, he was feeling it.
It's the most ambitious shot in America outside of Ford's Theater in, you know, a couple hundred years, man.
That's a reference. I'm Tim Cato. I write about the Mavericks. I am working on, 4 hours of sleep, 2 coffees, 2 breakfast tacos. Where are you at, Dave?
I got 7 hours of sleep. Feeling good.
Okay.
Having a little cold brew now so I can catch up to Tim Cato.
0 breakfast tacos?
I don't eat breakfast, man.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Mike, where are you at?
That's a flex right there.
Mike Pelucci.
A little more sleep than you had a half grapefruit and a granola bar for breakfast. I'm gearing up because while I edit Tim, I also edit other teams too. And so Friday and Sunday are triple headers for me of games that have my writers are on. So I'm just going to be a corpse by next week. We need some series to get closed out real quick before I'm just in the grave.
Are you guys with me? Do you root for sweeps? Like, I'm rooting for a sweep right here. I want the Mavs to sweep this thing. It's a 2-0 series lead. If they don't sweep, it's going 7. So I'm rooting for the sweep. Like, let's get it over. Let's go. Let's move on to the next round. We've seen it, right?
I mean, why delay the inevitable, right? Like, here's another example. One of my other teams is Brooklyn. All right, we know that how this is going.
It's a wrap. You're out of here, Boston.
Get it done. I think, like, I'm not, you know, like, the Clippers could give us, you know, a little bit of a fight here for the next few games in terms of what we're paying attention to. So, you know, it's not as obvious there, but, like, that Boston team is just 1 foot in the grave. Like,
Let's shovel some dirt
on them. Let's go to the next round.
I don't think anybody's here for our Brooklyn talk. Full check-in. Let's go all the way around the circle. Kent Garrison, our always producer. Fantastic. Where are you at? Sleep, tacos, coffee?
All I got to say is, let's effing go, boys. Gosh, what a night.
Kent's clearly on like 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah. very little sleep. But hey, you know, it's that time of year. And the only thing I'll say is, it's funny because I was watching the game in the living room. The wife was in the bedroom, you know, watching Friends reruns. And Luca does that, you know, slam dunk in the first half. And I was like, I screamed and she it scared her. And she came into the living room and was like, hey, can you not scream? Like, you can get excited, but just not scream.
Can you not?
I got scared. And I was like, yeah, no problem. And the rest of the game goes. And then that one-footed three-pointer comes and I screamed again. And I was like, I don't even care. And scared her again. But that was just the kind of night it was. But it really feels like we're watching just like a legend in the making before our eyes, guys, with Luka. It's insane.
There's a lot of people in Los Angeles right now that that Luka is scaring.
I don't want to do the white guy comp for Luka.
This
is a Larry Bird comp, okay? Because I think Larry Bird was a special kind of, and there's no other way for me to say this, and Kent, feel free to bleep this if you need to, but Larry Bird was a special kind of motherfucker. Right. And in basketball, mm-hmm. like that's a thing. Luka Doncic is a motherfucker. Yep. And last night we saw that shit. I mean, not only is he just completely abusing Patrick Beverley in this series, he is absolutely dominating the Clippers and letting them know. I mean, you know, no one on that team can guard him. And every single bucket, he is reminding them, oh, hey, I just put another one on your head. This is Larry Bird shit. I mean, if you told me that he said to Paul George, in game 3, I'm just going to play left-handed, I'm here for it. I think that he is that dude.
There's a level of star and stardom that you reach where you're not a, you know, you can take mid-rangers, three-pointers, like, you're a bucket getter. You don't define the buckets you get by a place on the court. No. Luka, I don't think we talk enough about his touch. His touch is just, I think it's his most, his absolute elite talent is his touch from anywhere, from any situation, no matter how he's taking the shot. It's elite. It's as good as anybody I've ever seen. And he's just a bucket getter. He's going to go get buckets on you. Like he wasn't able to do that quite as often in the mid-range last season. Nah, no. Now he's got it. You know, he's hitting it over Kawhi. He's hitting it over whoever. It's absurd.
Here's what you need to know, right? So game one ends. Tim and I are talking about what Tim's going to write. And it was obviously the role players, right? That was very much the story of the first game. But one of the things that I said, I was like, don't write about Luka because Luka Doncic, 30-point triple-double, seventh playoff game ever, right? That's what he puts up. And I said, don't write about Luka because that's not going to be his best game in the series. What the hell? He's 22 years old. It's his seventh playoff game. He puts up a 30-point triple-double. And I'm as confident as the sky is blue. I'm like, nah, he's going to have a better game. Last night, he goes 39-7-7. And I still don't think that's the best game he's going to have this series. I don't know what it's going to look like, but there's going to be something he does where you're just like, you throw up your hands even more than you already have. And you're like, good luck, man. Good luck trying to stop that. He is 22 and he's played in 8 playoff games. This is wild. It's just insane. I can't wrap my brain around it.
Is it weird to you guys that I think I'd put Luka Doncic up in the top 4 or 5 guys if I had one game I needed to win? Is that weird?
No.
What?
It's weird because he's only a third-year player. No, but it's weird that he's only a third-year player, and I'm already like,
it's weird that you said 4 or 5. It's like he's higher than that already. That's the weird thing that you just said.
I think a game on the line, I want him, Dame, or Jokic, and nobody else.
Steph.
No. I watch Steph Curry flip the ball out of bounds in crunch time too often. I'm sorry. I just do. And I mean, you guys, I think Steph Curry right now is probably the best player in the league. And, you know, it's some combination of the top four of him, Luka, LeBron, and Jokic this season, I think. You know, LeBron obviously being hurt the latter half of the year. But no, man, Luka takes care of the ball in crunch time. And so does Jokic and so does Dame. Valuing the basketball in crunch time to me is just as important as being able to perform. Steph never values the ball, but that's why you can get these huge explosions from Steph. Luka's able to do it in spite of, you know, not being wild with it. Although 7 turnovers in the game last night, but
he did have that one. He did have one late in the game where they went right behind him and picked it on the double,
right.
And that was you know, but that doesn't happen often.
But it's rare. Yeah,
it's rare, and that's
why he turned it over. It's rare. He's going to learn from that. He's going to figure that out. But he just hasn't seen that enough yet. As he continues to see stuff like that, I think he's going to figure that out too.
The rate at which he learns and processes and adapts is just frightening, right? Like, I'm going to make a terrible movie comp. Well, it's a decent comp to a mediocre movie, but there is one of those X-Men movies that Days of Future Past, where basically the world is on the brink of extinction because these super sentinel robots are destroying everybody. And why are they destroying everybody? Because they're going against Wolverine and Storm and all these people, and they absorb their powers, and everything you used to be able to do against them, it doesn't work anymore. That's Ivica Zubac against Luka Doncic. Last year, it's like, okay, fine, we'll switch Ivica to Zubac. And it worked very well. Within about 5 minutes in game one, everybody realized, oh, that's not happening anymore. That was the linchpin of a lot of the Clippers' schemes against him. And it was just out the window because he just figured out that's not going to work anymore. Just like this year, he learned how to shoot mid-rangers and his 3-point stroke is improving. He keeps adding and adding at such a frightening rate that the stuff that will work against him now, by mid-year next year, it might not even work anymore because he's too smart and too skilled.
He is playing in the Matrix.
Yeah,
he literally just downloads new skills when he needs them. And this, the one-legged three, I just want to go back to this because it is like just such a, I mean, huge onion shot. Like, what are you doing? When he was pulling up for it, I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, he must have felt contact. But then I watched and I was like, there was no contact. And he just launched. And he hits. It was insane. He was just so hot.
But here's the thing. It wasn't just a big onion shot, right? Like, I feel like sometimes we say that you watch it and you see that a guy has this locked in sense of the moment. Like, I'm going to do something here. And I'm going to make this happen. That felt to me like he was having fun. Like, and this is why I joked at the end of the podcast about it being art, but like, it felt like basketball art where he's out there and he wants to bend the game in a way that nobody else can. He's like, I'm going to try this, but he's trying it in the heat of a playoff game. Right. And he just says, I'm going to try this. Let's see what happens. And it works. He has this little grin on his face and he goes back the other end. I mean, it takes courage.
Total,
it takes
total Jordan shoulder shrug.
Yeah. You know? And it takes courage and it takes balls, but like it takes imagination and it takes whimsy and it takes him just saying, I'm going to try this and have fun. But feeling that with no pressure in a game like this is otherworldly. That's the mental fortitude to not. It's one level of mental fortitude to say, this is a big moment, I'm going to do something. It's another to know it's a big moment, do something, but just seem utterly unconcerned because, whatever, I got 13 more minutes. I'll find another way to beat him if this shot doesn't go. Let's try it and see what goes down. That's special. That's beyond special.
This podcast doesn't need much structure. We're just talking Mavericks up 2-0. Let's reset briefly and just kind of see where everything is. Obviously, they won Tuesday night, 127-121, up 2-0 in the series. We didn't have Dave on last week, but you and me, Mike, were both fairly pessimistic about the Mavericks' chances, or just fairly pessimistic about everything coming together that would need to come together. I think that maybe is more the key or more where I landed on. I did think this was possible. I definitely didn't think they were going to win both of these first two games. I did expect them to win one. I don't know if I said that, so, you know, if it seems like a stolen valor, that's fine. But I did think they would win one of these games, and I just thought as the series went on that it would fade a little bit. At this point, they've beaten the Clippers four times this year. They've beaten them three times the exact same way. We're going to toss out the 50-point game. Whatever happened there, I don't understand. It doesn't matter. They've beaten it's an exact formula, and I wrote about this morning, Wednesday morning. It's that Luka is this good, just the otherworldly player that we've been talking about, like that is a. I mean, at this point, it seems constant. I don't see that changing. Maybe he has one clunker of a game. He's going to be this good pretty much the rest of the series. Like that's how good he is, and that's how he turns up for the playoffs, and that's how few options LA has against him. Dallas shooting the lights out. You know, they're at 50% through the first two games. We can talk about that. Obviously, that will fall a bit. It almost has to. That's just how stats work, numbers work, reality works. The role players are showing up. You know, I had questions about Brunson being able to navigate the size of this team. He figured it out. He's got it. You know, I and like I said, I had questions. I wanted to see if he could do it. He can do it. He's done it through two games. The Clippers, you know, sure, the Mavericks can't stop Kawhi. They don't really have a Kawhi stopper, but they can slow him down just enough that, you know, they aren't sacrificing their entire defensive structure to sell out and prevent him from getting, you know, say 60. And that's all they need, because even Paul George has been fine this series. Not, you know, probably not as good as the playoff P haters want from him, but he's been fine, and it just hasn't mattered because the Mavericks defense has been good. It's been good throughout. We've seen it be good throughout the season, but the what it hinges on every time is Porzingis. I think that, you know, it's more complicated than that. Of course it is. But so much of it hinges on Porzingis, whether he is providing splash plays, steals and blocks, and then just whether he's moving his feet. And I pulled out an instance where he gets matched on to Paul George with time on the shot clock, and he doesn't cede much ground, and George ends up going to the step back, and he's right there contesting him right in his face because he's that long and tall. He's moving well. All of that added up, you know, like it does take those five things all happening, I think, for the Mavericks to beat LA. And that's where I was pessimistic. I just, you know, I wasn't sure that they're going to get all five often enough, but they have. And I just don't see any way, like it feels sustainable. It feels like it's just going to keep happening. You know, maybe not game three or maybe not game four. They just need it to happen twice more in five chances. Like I almost can't see any way it doesn't happen unless somebody on the team just dramatically falls off from their performances in the first two games. And by a player, I really mean either Luka or KP.
I think that's a great point. That if Luka falls off, you know, I mean, you don't win the second game for sure. If he doesn't do what he did. The role players are shooting the absolute lights out. That is unsustainable, okay? 47% from three in the first game, 53% from three in the second game. The field goal percentage is off the charts. I mean, free throws or whatever. I was pessimistic about this series because the Clippers can shoot the lights out. They did all year. And the Mavs have struggled to hit open shots. And I figured the game plan was get Luka to give the ball up, make the other guys make plays. Well, they're making plays, and so is Luka. They can't stop Luka, and the role players are crushing. I think this series is going to go 7 games. I don't think the Clippers are out of this, but they could be. I think it's all now about the first quarter of game 3. Like, the whole series is going to come down to that. This matchup clearly is much more tilted toward the Mavs than I even thought coming in. Because the role players are playing well. But if they weren't, I mean, obviously we wouldn't be here. But this shooting, likely unsustainable. But the offense is getting such good looks that you could argue, well, shit, this is how they kind of should have been shooting all year. Maybe they're just rounding into form. I don't know. But we're here. We're 2-0 going back to Dallas. 2 out of 5 is doable easily.
Luka is good enough that in game 2, 16 of the threes the Mavericks attempted were wide open looks. They hit 10 of them. That's a high number. But if you're going to get 16 wide open threes in a game, that is higher than anybody averaged this season. That is a number that you can sustain to some level because the looks are there. The looks are good. The looks are open. Now, yeah, there's going to be some fall off. Eventually Tim Hardaway has to miss something. But you know, Dorian Finney-Smith wasn't that good in game 2 offensively, and Maxey wasn't good offensively in game 1. If Brunson, Richardson, and Finney-Smith all three have an off night, or if Hardaway and Maxey aren't going, and you have to, you know, kind of move away from that starting five that has logged most of the minutes as the primary lineup in the series, yeah, that's when there's a few more questions. But I have faith and trust that Finney-Smith, Kleba, Brunson, Hardaway, in Richardson, you get 3 of those 5 going. I think 3 of the 5 is all you need. And that gives room for them to be a little bit worse. And that's the crucial part. I thought it would be something more like 2 of 4 if Brunson wasn't able to make his impact that he has been. And, so that's less of a concern. You know, they even got good minutes from Cauley Stein. You know, he played 15, scored 6, had 6 rebounds. That's all really good stuff. And, you know, combine that with how good Luka's going to be every game here on out until the rest, you know, to the end of the series. You know, assuming that's true and assuming Porzingis, that's the other point I made about Porzingis. Like, they seem to succeed or fail no matter how he's playing offensively. Now, he does contribute to the 3-point shooting, and that's important, but they don't need a huge offensive game from him. They don't need him creating shots. They just need him as a really smart, sharp spot up guy who's acting as a decoy. He even said that in a quote after the game last night, and just to kind of play another role. And I think they have enough people in those roles playing those roles that, you know, they can survive an off night or two as long as Luka is this good and their defense is still good enough to really limit what the Clippers are doing outside of George and Kawhi.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Porzingis because everything you're saying about the role players is true, but they have another out, right? If the role players are off, or even let's say they get, you know, 3 out of those 5 going, well, this all presumes that Porzingis has offensively is what he has been, which game 1, he didn't have a good game. Game 2, he was very efficient, but it was a very ancillary threat. There are absolutely ways that Kristaps Porzingis can take over a game. We've seen it. It's not something that can or should be depended on, but there absolutely is a scenario in which, yeah, maybe the role players go cold, but maybe that's the night when Porzingis is on and suddenly he's going for 30. That's a possibility. There are ways to mitigate some role player regression, most notably if Kristaps Porzingis plays like Kristaps Porzingis, second star of the Dallas Mavericks. So it's funny because I think one of the reasons I was pessimistic was I just looked at that Clipper team and I looked at this Dallas team and I thought that Clipper team has so many ways to win a game and I don't know how many ways this Dallas team does. And now 2 games into the series, I have it reversed where I'm sitting here thinking, well, we're talking about, you know, we've seen these role players step up in this moment, right? And I think that's a big reason for why I feel a lot more optimistic and why Dallas is up 2-0. this isn't too big for any of them. Tim Hardaway isn't afraid to take big shots in a playoff environment and make them. Jalen Brunson is afraid to get to the rack. You know, Dorian Finney-Smith is out there in the heat of the battle. Maxi Kleba's making plays. Josh Richardson is not what they want Josh Richardson to be, but he's contributed. They have enough guys who are showing up, irrespective of what Porzingis is doing, that they have options. And on the other side of this, who would you even say is the Clippers' third best player in this series? Right? Like
Rajon Rondo.
I mean, maybe. I don't even think anybody's made a convincing case. You know, it's not the stars that are the problem. I mean, George has been fine, but George isn't the problem. The issue is you can't win that way unless both of those dudes are going supernova hot, and I can't see that working to win four games.
Well, so, they did it last night, though. They scored like 70 combined last night, and they got nothing from anybody else.
Right, right. So it was
69 points combined. Very nice.
Nice.
Very nice game.
Nice. So what do you do at that point if you're LA? You need the supporting cast to step up, but you don't just need – it's not like you need one guy to get going. You need probably three dudes who have not played well in this series when their backs are against the wall going on the road to say, okay, start playing well now and get everything that you've been getting from Kawhi and Paul.
They miss Lou Williams a little bit because they just don't have anybody who can get you 20. You know, Reggie Jackson is just not very good. Rajon Rondo is not going to score like that. He's not going to be aggressive enough. Morris, you know, like they tried that a little bit. I don't know how'd that go. Zubac, this is not the series for him. He's not going to get you buckets anyway, especially not in this series. It just feels like they don't have that guy. And then Ibaka not being mobile is really hurting them because they don't have a big that they can go to who could even potentially hang when getting switched onto Luka. Not that Ibaka really can. Nobody can. So I don't know, man. Like I get more and more pessimistic the more I sit here and think about it. But a lot of it is Porzingis being so good in game two and using his gravity effectively when he didn't have the ball. Especially like down the stretch, there were times where they got the Clippers in rotation and you could watch and Porzingis was working the corner to the dunker spot, trying to keep the defense honest so that they couldn't go up and trap the ball. And he wound up with a dunk out of this late in the game. And that sort of stuff hasn't been there all year from him. He seems really, really engaged.
I think last series, last season, last series, the Mavericks Clippers first round 1.0, I think the third best player was Zubac. I think that's not even a stretch at all. And I think if he wasn't being played off the floor by Doncic, I think he could still be that third best player. And that has been such a huge switch that, you know, they're not getting the second chance points. Zubac played 22 minutes and really every moment minute he's on the floor, you're having to scheme defensively around him just to make sure to limit how much damage Doncic can do by getting switched onto him and then, you know, taking him and hitting whatever he's going to hit. And so, you know, there's probably one easy source that would be, you know, a fallback for the Clippers that would be helpful. And that's a huge difference as compared to last series.
And at this point too, right? I mean, you mentioned the word you out-schemed. Ty Lue going against Rick Carlisle now, down two games when he's got to figure out adjustments. That's not going to work in the Clippers' favor. That was always one of the bigger mismatches going into this series in Dallas's favor was they had the better coach. Now they have the lead in the better coach. What can Ty Lue throw at Dallas that they haven't seen that Rick can't counter? I don't know. It's not that they won't. Again, like they're not. I don't think Dallas is sweeping this team, but I don't see how LA wins four more games to get this done.
Is this team not coachable? Are the Clippers not coachable? Is that just what it is? Because look, Ty Lue is a good coach. I'm gonna die on this hill. No, he's not the best coach, but he's a good coach and he adjusts. He makes changes. I mean, that's the thing that I know Ty Lue for as a coach. His Cleveland Cavaliers team were constantly adjusting. I mean, in-game adjustments, between game adjustments. I mean, it's just the thing that I relate with Ty Lue is his coaching adjustments. There were none game one to game two. There were just none. It looks so much like last year. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more. Luka is going to, he's going to kill this Clippers team. That's it. I'm calling it. It's over. I'm just talked myself into it. This Kawhi is going to leave because Luka is going to beat this team that's just like poorly constructed. All right. Maybe that doesn't happen, but I just don't understand what's happening. There was just no difference in game one and game two. And I know that the Dallas role players have shot the lights out, but still nothing changed.
When's the last time
Pat Beverly still got worked?
When's the last time a team won the finals without a tempo setting, rhythm dictating, playmaking ball handler?
Yeah, they don't have anyone that's doing that. That's a great point. There's no pace setter for them. There is no Luka. There's no LeBron. There's no Jokic. There's no, you know, Draymond Green. There's no Lowry out there doing that, right?
Yeah, you know, you go back through the past decade. Honestly, the last team is probably the Mavericks, to be totally honest. The 11 Mavericks, in the sense that Jason Kidd was not a scorer on the level of all the playmaking guards that followed him. He certainly was a rhythm tempo dictator, and it was necessary for Dirk to be as good as he was, is that, you know, he had someone who could reliably make sure and get him those shots. And Kawhi and Paul George are, you know, shades of the same player. George is just a bit of a worse Kawhi. And as I see them in the playoffs, again, like, they look so good during the regular season. And if this is what they look like in the postseason, that's the only explanation I can come up with.
It's a good one. I mean, I think their best chance, they need to ride Rondo hard you know, they need to put him in and really let him. This is why they got him. This is why you traded Lou and a couple picks for this moment. It's not working with Pat Beverly. It's definitely not working with Reggie Jackson. You got to try, if you're Ty Lue, and just let Rondo run this offense. But at the same time, if you were relying on Rajon Rondo in his mid-30s to save you, then what have you done on a team-building level to bring yourself to this point?
Now, hold on. Now, to their defense, it's very difficult to find that guy, right? Like, Kyle Lowry was going to be very expensive for them if they got him. I mean, it's not, you know, I'm sure that we can all sit here and say, wow, you need to get this guy. They just don't grow on trees. But
they don't.
Yeah, there's like 10
you've
got to
do better than
league.
They've done, right? But you've got to do better than they've done to mitigate not having that guy. I mean, if
that's
you look
I mean.
At, all right,
that's
so look at
mean.
Utah, right? Look at Utah. They've got a drink stirrer in Donovan Mitchell. They've got Mike Conley, but then they have Joe Ingles and they have Bojan Bogdanovic, who can also do stuff. And that's what the Clippers are missing. They're missing the extra guys that can make stuff happen. We know Kawhi can do it. We know Paul George can do it individually. They don't have a third guy like the Nets. You know, you scheme for two guys. Okay, now here's a third. They're missing either that or a Jason Kidd or a Chris Paul, a lower end offense starter. Not lower end, but lower than Kawhi and Paul George. You know what I mean?
So yeah. So what happens if they start Rondo and Batum in game three over Zubac?
I mean, it's better than what they've been doing, I think. Batum is better. Just you got more size. I would actually try Batum on Luka with everyone else, like with Kawhi and Paul George in help.
Right.
See if some of that length can bother him. And Batum is stout. He's not going to hold up for the whole game against Luka, but you know, he's not going to get pushed under the basket like Pat Beverly did.
Yeah, I think as much as you can survive Luka with a single man, like that's what the Clippers have to try to go to. And again, it's the same with the Mavericks and Kawhi. It's just that Luka also has the all this playmaking tempo setting that we described that makes him even more dangerous. But yeah, you have to live with what Luka's going to do, and you have to try to slow him down just enough with one player, without doubling, without switching Zubac onto him, etc. And so I think that's why they go small. And then I think that's where the focus shifts to Porzingis and how much he can do when he is 7 inches taller than the next tallest player on the court, or the next tallest Clipper.
Yeah, that was my concern going into this, is what are the Clippers going to do to try and scheme around Porzingis, and what is Dallas's counter move there? this is contingent on them actually trying this, right? You know, I would think if you're Ty Lue, you may not make your adjustments for game one or two. You damn sure better make some going into Dallas for game three. But that is going to be interesting. You know, what will their schematic wrinkle be? I mean, I'm with you that it's at this point, you can't stop Luka no matter what you do. So the hope is you try to guard the role players and you count on the fact that, hey, you have some great defensive wing options. Plus there will be some shooting aggression baked in. Try to slow the rest of them down enough and say, if Luka needs to score 50, then okay, fine. That to me is a much more sustainable strategy than we're going to burn out Kawhi trying to guard Luka. We're going to try to do this to guard Luka. You're not going to guard Luka. If Kawhi Leonard can't guard Luka, nobody's guarding Luka. So just use Batum to do that, like Dave said, because what else is Batum on the floor for? And Try to shut down the ancillary threats. And
whenever that's small, they're still going to switch everything. You know, it's going to be Kawhi, exactly. Paul George, Marcus, and Batum. And you're going to switch all those four reliably. And you're going to say, okay, Luka, you're going to score against our wings, but you're not going to score like you do on Zubac, or that's the hope. It's a good gamble to make. I'd be shocked if Zubac starts. Beverly, you know, they might not make the Rondo for Beverly switch, but I'd be shocked if Zubac is in there starting Friday night.
I think they need to have Zubac in there for the non-Luka minutes. I mean, he had a great block on Jalen Brunson at the basket, you know, where he let him get past him. I think that's when he can play. He can play when Luka's off the court, but he can't be out there and be a target. You know, I wonder if we might see some more zone out of the Clippers. The number one thing I think the Clippers need to ditch, and they've needed to ditch it for 2 years, is how lazy their switching is. It requires no resistance whatsoever to get this Clippers team to switch. And I think that that's a mistake. I'd like to see them fight over some of these Dallas screens, you know? Make Luka work.
Kawhi did in the first half.
Yeah.
But Luka he's work the exception. Harder. I agree with you.
Paul George is really good at navigating screens and just doesn't do it. You know, and we know Rondo isn't going to, he's not fighting over anything. I just think that's what I would be doing. Like, you've got to make, and I know it's funny because Luka's working his butt off, but make him work more, make him work harder. Try to bother him with the rear view contests and really put the pressure on those role players. But I'm with you. I think you try to play him straight up. Just put a bigger body on him. You cannot, if Patrick Beverley is isolated on Luka Doncic one more damn time, I mean, I'm screaming at the television because I don't root for anybody. I just, you know, but that's frustrating to watch. It's like, you know, it's like you're playing your little brother on a little tykes basket. He can't guard him. He's too small. So anyway, I'm rambling now because it's so frustrating to watch.
Right, but you know, I mean, but here's the thing. This is what goes back to, you know, your open question about is how coachable is this team, right? They're not going to suddenly start fighting over, you know, fighting on defense one game to the next after 2 years of this. That's not going to happen. So, I mean, who knows how much this internal communication is going on behind the scenes? We have no idea. But even if it is, especially no team's going to adjust that fast, that comprehensively for something fundamental like that, but especially not one that's a veteran team like this. This isn't a malleable group. This is a group of guys who are what they are, and you got them to be, you know, essentially NBA finishing school. It's all right. You all know what you're doing. You all know to play. Let's get that ring. It's not happening. And I don't know how you push the buttons to make this happen all of a sudden.
So if they go small, if the emphasis is on, you know, single coverage on Luka, don't come off the role players as easily. That's my expectation for what we're going to see. And I mentioned this, but I think for the Mavericks, the emphasis then falls on Porzingis and what he can do against a team that is dramatically smaller than him, where he should be scoring 20 points in the paint and at the free throw line combined, you know, really from here on out, if that's how they're going to approach the rest of the series. Is he up for that?
I do like how physical Porzingis was in game two on the offensive end. He was seeking out, like he was jamming smaller guys, seeking out mismatches, trying to rub his defender away. And then trying to establish position. And he was really aggressive about that. He's got to continue to do that. You're right. Like he has to match Luka's aggression level. And if he can do that, I mean, they can win this in five.
Yeah, he doesn't need to take a single unassisted shot. and he can still be averaging 25 the rest of the series with that type of size advantage. Like, he should be crashing and cutting and getting offensive rebounds. He should be in the paint all the time. He should be able to get a few post-ups within like 10 feet that he just turns over his shoulder. I'm fine with those. Those are close enough. He'll make, you know, 47% of them or something. You know, as long as he's doing that, that's a good enough look. He doesn't need to be backing anybody down or facing up anyone from outside of 15 feet. And he can still be a second star in the series. Like, we can table larger Porzingis talk for another point. I mean, I know that there's a billion opinions out there about him. For this series, he can be the second star if they go small, just, you know, just by doing bigger, you know, just by being big. Just he's taller than these dudes. Like, they can't stop him. I remember in game one, I had a screenshot of Kawhi rotating over to help. He's in the paint. And it's the game ceiling dunk, actually. And Porzingis has barely come inside the 3-point line. He's cutting, and Finney Smith is passing to him, and Kawhi's in the paint. Kawhi doesn't even try to contest. Like, yeah, his momentum isn't quite in the right place, but another player, Kawhi's going to have a chance there. But, you know, when you're 7'3", he's just taller. There's only so many ways I can say this. So, yeah, he needs to be that level of physical center that you know, we've seen before, especially in New York. That's the player he has to be if this is how the Clippers shift. I think he can be. I've seen enough good signs in the first two. You know, if he can do that and then take a few spot up threes and hopefully convert, you know, a couple of them, that's a second star. Like, that is a level of player that's crucial and that can push you to a win. And that's what the Mavericks need from him. You know, if the Clippers make the adjustments they do. I'm trying to think if there's anything else LA could do that would make sense. It has to be that.
They can't. I mean, they're shooting the ball fine, right? Like, right. That's the other thing, is it just the Mavericks are shooting so much better.
They can shoot a bit better, I think. But like, I agree.
The story of this series, if I were just to take someone and say, hey, let me fill you in on these two games, I'm going to talk so much more about what Luka is doing and how the Mavs are shooting. And that tells me, the Clippers need to figure that out. You got to try to stop Luka, and you got to try to shut that shooting down. They're not running him off the 3-point line enough. I think that's something that they could do. Again, it's about defensive activity for the Clippers. And if they can turn it up, they should be the better team here. I mean, if we're looking at the regular season, I mean, this is, you know, a better team in the regular season. But Luka Doncic is the best player in this series. And as we know in the playoffs, that usually can determine it. Especially if you've got good enough role players, and these guys are playing their butts off. I mean, they are playing their best basketball at the right time. I think Porzingis looks super healthy. He looks spry. And I mean, they might make the Western Conference Finals. Like, they really, the way things are going for them right now, it's feasible. Especially, you know, if Chris Paul is out for Phoenix and if the Lakers don't get healthy.
Well, they'd have Utah next.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. With Utah, if Donovan Mitchell isn't healthy. Yeah.
The other series. Yeah. And that's actually a better, because Phoenix spanked them throughout. Obviously, you would either hit the Lakers or the Suns, depending on who comes out.
Right.
We assume they're going to win the winner of that will win the second. And that's probably one of those two teams is going to have a much better chance at Dallas. But anyway, we're getting ahead of a little bit ahead.
No.
It's a 2-0 lead. But yeah, I mean, game two was closer than game one score wise. Game one's the one I look at and say, okay, if the shooting goes a little bit differently on each side, if the Clippers make a few shots they should have, if the Mavericks miss a few shots that were just heavily contested, that could have been a Clippers win. But it would have felt like, even then, to me, I think that the Clippers won it, you know, against the run of play, as they say in soccer, you know, that they almost like they stole one. You know, if you just went back and changed the results and still had game two the way it was, it would feel like this Mavericks strategy, this Mavericks team is set up to succeed, and more things are more likely to go right for them than the Clippers need at this point to go right for them to win.
Yeah, well, I think last night was a textbook example too of the last 4:49 coming out of that timeout of that game. You know, I tweeted, I said, we're going to learn a lot about where this team is and its development with how they handle this, because LA was on a huge run. Dallas is bleeding momentum. Let's just pause to reflect on the fact that whatever happens the rest of the way, all those concerns from a year ago about what do they do in crunch time, I think those are gone, because they were not scared of that at all. They got together, they made plays down the stretch. Luka figured it out. You know, they tried to throw Pat Beverly on him again. Luka just bullied him. They got looks. Porzingis had another key dunk down the stretch. They know how to play now in pressure situations. And we know whatever happens, whether they, you know, I suppose if they somehow lose the series, then we have a big picture discussion, right? But let's assume they win this series because odds are they're going to. Even if they lose next round, if nothing else, you know, those big picture conversations will revisit at some point. What you at least know is that of the role players that are on this roster, maybe they're not, you know, maybe it's not the exact alchemy of what a championship team is, but the parts that are here, they can hang in big series. They can hang in big moments. So that's a big victory. There are, I mean, look at just the other team they're playing to see how important it is when you don't have those ancillary guys, right? I think we spent a lot of time thinking about, well, who's the second star? Who's the third star? Well, it's hard to get five or six role players who know what they're doing and play really well and don't disappear in the postseason. LA has two bona fide star players, and right now it doesn't matter as much as it should because the supporting cast is just melting.
The Mavericks are headed back to Dallas, where there's going to be crowds of about 15,000 people, which this is just hilarious to me. Like, it, as if the Clippers couldn't have more that's going against them. You know, I don't know what effect that would have, but I mean, you have to imagine it's going to help Dallas even more, right?
Here's my thing. These guys haven't played in front of like a real crowd in, I don't know, 15 months.
Yeah.
No way this is going to be normal for them. It's going to be weird. It's going to, I mean, I
think it's going to be amplified. I think the effect of that many people cheering for you is only going to be like more euphoric and
is this
more
be a
dopamine
blowout?
Producing.
If this is a blowout, it's going to be one of the funnier ones in NBA history. And I'm already ready for Paul George and his post-game interviews. I mean, you know, there's no pressure. There's no pressure right now when they're down 0-2. And he's right. There is no pressure because he gets paid the same no matter what. Right? So, you know, the check's still clear, so there's no pressure. But, man, 0-3, Paul George is going to have some fucking bangers. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. He said, what did he say? He said something like, okay, we obviously have to turn it up, but there's not a level of concern right now. And then Haley O'Shaughnessy, I saw her tweet something to the effect of, this is when I'm glad Paul George is an NBA player, not like a gas leak inspector. It's a good tweet. It's a good tweet. I'll give her that.
I think Paul George is probably happy about that too. I mean, and frankly, I am too, because I enjoy watching Paul George.
If my gas the post-game is ever quotes, leaking man. on a 2-0 deficit headed home. Yeah, no. I don't want Paul George showing up and being like, oh, you know, your gas leak, it's got to get things together, but nope, no concern.
It's going to call one of those.
Figure this out.
You got to call one of those plumbers that Michael Jordan used to play against. That's who we got to call.
Oh, man.
We got to wrap this thing up. We're 45 minutes here, man. Like, look, y'all want to make predictions?
What? Why are you guys always trying
to make
me make
predictions? There's
no
pressure on us. Why
would
we make
predictions? Give the people what they want. Be like Paul George, Tim. No pressure. Don't feel any of that pressure. Just throw something out there. See what happens.
I mean, I say the Mavericks win one of the two. Obviously, it matters. The series is over if it's game three. If it's game four, it's over as well. Yeah, I think this series goes back to LA 3-1. It really does feel like that at this point. It would take two narrow losses where all the things go wrong, like kind of Luka has a clunker and the role players are good and the Clippers just squeeze it out. And then Luka's great and the role players don't have it. You know, if they can just get, you know, I think these things are coming. There's going to be a bit of regression. We know that if they can just get it all in the same game, it doesn't matter. The series will be done in five or six. There's definitely outcomes where it is a bit more segmented and fragmented, and I don't think it's impossible the Clippers could grab both, but I'm not high. I just, you know, I'm trying not to get ahead of myself. And but it's,
there's
it's
a gambling
again.
Model that I trust that has projected a sweep at about 30%.
Oh boy!
And the Clippers losing in five at about 20%.
Right.
So, I mean, the indicators are there.
Right.
Just saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's everything I'm saying is just I'm trying to look at what I've seen and I see something that's replicable at least twice more in five games and probably more than that. And I don't see the Clippers really having many other options that, you know, they can't just do this again and think it's going to work this time. Like they have one big change that they can make, and it's going smaller for large portions of the game. And I just don't think, you know, I think KP is able to counter that. We'll see. You know, maybe I have this read wrong, but I think that's where I'm at.
Okay. I'll go. If Dallas wins game three, this is over in five. The Clippers are going to take two more games after that. So if Dallas wins game three, it's over in five. If they win game four, it's over in six. I don't think it gets to a seventh game. Dave, where are you at?
You know what, man? I'm sitting here talking myself into a sweep. And I'm trying to figure out if it's wishful thinking or not, you know? Because like I said, I have this thing. If a series is 2-0, let's just go ahead and get it over. Like, just do the sweep. I don't know. I need to see game three. I think game three is obviously, this is so dumb to say. God, I've fallen into so many stupid sports cliches. Game three is pivotal. Because I do think that the Clippers got punched in the mouth two games in a row.
There's didn't another respond. Cliche.
But it legitimate, and it's basketball. It happens a lot. And now if they can come out and I mean dominate in game three, like they need to come out and win by 20. I'll feel much better about the Clippers.
At the very least, I think you're totally right with what you said earlier. They need to come out hot in the first quarter because that crowd is going to be
first nuclear. 5 minutes of that game.
You need to quiet that crowd down fast, because if you let Dallas get out to another fast start in front of that building, it's just going to mushroom and it's going to proliferate and then it's over.
I will say this in the first quarter.
Think back to that 50
point
win.
Because they did score in game two.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. No, well, nobody's defending in this series, and that's a whole other thing. But that 50 point win, it's all about that first 5 minutes. And the Clippers need to do more than just withstand it, because the crowd is going to be nuts. The Clippers need to extinguish the crowd in the first 5 minutes. They need like a 15 point lead halfway through the first quarter. And my worry for them is that the Mavericks are actually going to come in hot. And the next thing you know, it's like you see Ty Lue calling a timeout and it's 12-3 and it's over. That's the series. So, you know, I think that first 5 minutes is going to be crucial.
All right, boys, let's wrap this up. Thanks everybody for listening. We will possibly be back after game three.
Let's see what happens.
Bonus pod. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But we might sprinkle in a little bit of extra content on the feed. So just keep an eye out, and I'll let everybody know what's up with that. Until then.
Don't fight the future. Please be nice to Luca. Future four-time MVP.
Oh, my God. Oh! Shut it down. Let's go home. It's a wrap.
That is a wrap.